Welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Powercast. I'm your host, N64 Josh, and I got a very special guest today, Dave, who was the winner of the eShop card for being a subscriber over on Spotify. After we connected, was like, hey, would you want to have me on the show? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So here we are. We're gonna chat about Dave's history with gaming and unfortunately we're watching Double Dash, but Dave missed the GameCube. So Dave, how you doing?
I'm great, Josh. I'm great. I was just going to say, now that your fan base is expanding internationally, you know, you're going to have to give out eShop vouchers in other regions as well, not just the US ones. I'm sure you'll have Asia and other regions soon too.
You know, I think, yeah, it's with AI and everything, I'm planning on getting the show in as many languages as possible. Like, I was just messing with an AI called Descript, and you wouldn't even be able to, like, you upload your voice and then it outputs whatever language you want with your voice. So
that's wild.
It's quite impressive. And
you could put on an Australian accent maybe as well.
Yep. Yeah. There you go. There you go. So, but yeah, like, you know, we're on the other side, you know, we're opposite side of the world from each other right now. Timing is always an issue, but this happened to work out. And, let's dive right in. Like what is some of your, what's your history with Nintendo? Like, how did it start? Was it a console Christmas or inherited from an older brother? Or how, you know, a lot of the stories end up kind of being similar. What was yours?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yeah, no, Nintendo was my first console. It's funny because my mum bought it for me for Christmas, or maybe grandma, mum's mum. But mum's like very much against electronics, and she'd always try and restrict us to like half an hour a day and that kind of thing. But then she bought this for us. So sort of, I guess, in some ways gave in to me just nagging her constantly for it. And yeah, we had the basic games, you know, Mario Kart, Banjo-Kazooie, Diddy Kong Racing. Yeah, and it was sort of a real life-changing experience for me, and I remember so many hours after school and whatnot. We lived on a farm, so we're quite far removed from, you know, other kids, so this would be a good way to just, like, kick back and have some fun, or if friends came over, play as well. So yeah, that's how I got into Nintendo, mid to late 90s.
Okay, so we're talking the 64 was your first console.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's cool. So was it a Christmas gift, or did she just show up one day with the console and a handful of games?
Yeah, I think it was a Christmas gift. It's hard to remember now. I'm pretty sure I knew it was coming. Like, she took me to the shop and I picked the Nintendo over, I guess it was the PlayStation at the time, okay. And I picked some games. But then I think she wrapped it up and it was a Christmas gift. So I knew it was coming. Yeah, but it was probably the best Christmas gift I've ever had, honestly. But beats socks and sweaters or whatever you normally get, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I remember both my console Christmases, the NES and the Super Nintendo, like they were yesterday. Like I adored it. So again, the games that she that you ended up opening that Christmas, do you remember?
Yeah, I think there was a whole stash. As I said, we definitely had Mario Kart. It came with Mario Kart. It was probably my favorite of the bunch. We had International Superstar Soccer, which was really, really good. Before FIFA, I guess, was the main soccer game. Banjo-Kazooie, Diddy Kong Racing, F-Zero X, actually, too, which I kind of liked. I never really quite understood it, and it's obviously quite a difficult game. So I think they were the main ones. And then a few years later, I got Mario 64 as well, which is awesome, too.
Oh, you're doing better than me. I didn't play Mario 64 until three or four
on the Switch
ago or something. Yeah.
Well,
I was doing a stream on Twitch, and it was a 24-hour stream, and I was like, we need to play Mario 64. And so I think that's where it began. And some of the stuff that ended up happening during that stream was just wild, like trying to do certain jumps to get to certain locations and then falling very long, like just falling a long ways down. And just, you know, we were all having a good time just laughing at me being a goofball. But yeah, it was, I think it was on the Wii U. I think I played it emulated on the Wii U at the time, if I remember correctly. And, it was one that I played periodically, and I remember my kids having it on DS, and I would try to play it some there, but I would never play all the way through it. And when I finally did, I regret not playing it as a teenager. That's for sure.
Well, it's so good that it's aged fairly well. You know, I don't know about you, but playing some of the older games, even Wind Waker for me, which I know is a classic, I had to go back and play that, and I struggled a little bit going from Breath of the Wild to Wind Waker. It just felt like a bit dated. Do you get that feeling when you go back to these old classics that you enjoyed as a kid or maybe heard about but didn't play as a kid?
Absolutely. Yeah, there are some well, it's not a Nintendo game, but Final Fantasy VII, jumping into that for the first time I played it was on Switch. And like, without having that nostalgia pull, it's like, this is rough, you know, like It looks rough. It plays rough. But when, you know, at the time, of course it was phenomenal. And there's certain games that I'm scared to go back to because I'm just like, you know, I don't think this is going to have quite the allure that it did back in the day. And then it's tough to try and, you know, go back and play some of those games now that you've never done before. I don't think I had an issue with Mario 64. Like, yeah, it looked a little clunky, but the controls were pretty spot on. And the camera issues were there from the get-go. It was the front runner. It was setting the stage for what 3D gaming could and should be. So
it's still so good, right? Like you say, it's one of those few games that feels a little timeless. I played through Sunshine and Galaxy as well, you know, the package that was on Switch with all three of them, and they all play pretty well. Like Sunshine, probably my favorite, but they're all really good. Do you have a favorite of the 3D Marios, or maybe Odyssey?
Odyssey takes the cake for me, for sure. Like Odyssey takes the cake, but Galaxy 2 is right up there. And then Galaxy 1, and then Sunshine and 64. I've never actually completed Sunshine. Like I was trying to hunt. I remember trying to 100% it, and I literally think that there are spots in that game, and especially after playing it this last time, that like you can go into a level that you can't complete if you don't have, like, let's say Yoshi or something. And I didn't realize that at the time, and I was trying to 100%, and I ended up getting frustrated not being able to reach a certain shine sprite, and I tried everything, and I tried often, and I was like, yeah, I give up. Like this isn't working out for me. So I still need to beat. Maybe that'll be my goal for 2024, is to finally beat Sunshine. But yeah, I never did. But Galaxy 2 And it's such a close one with Galaxy One. Like they're both just so phenomenal. But the Yoshi takes the cake for me. When you get to ride Yoshi in a Mario game, there was so much hype around that in Super Mario World that it's an automatic like plus four nostalgia when I go and play something where you can ride Yoshi. It was honestly one of my, like, with Wonder, I was a little bit bummed out that Yoshi was like a playable character all the time. And then the only way that you could ride Yoshi was to technically play as Yoshi and then have somebody else jump on top. Like,
it doesn't feel like an upgrade anymore.
No, it didn't feel like he felt like a big power up, you know? And it was just, it's hard to put into words, honestly, the feeling that went with Super Mario World. And like when you saw Mario jump on Yoshi for the first time, like, and you saw him ride the dinosaur and you're just like, this is such a huge upgrade from what we were doing on the NES. And
was it a surprise? Did you know that you could jump onto Yoshi when you'd started playing the game? Like, had you heard from friends, or did you jump on and it was like, whoa, I didn't know you could do this?
It was in the marketing material. Like, I remember, I'm trying to think, honestly, like, because back then, you know, there was no YouTube. There was no, like, you would see commercials, right? And then I had somebody send me yesterday, his name, Brian or Destinati, he was one of the original hosts of MPC. He sent me this old game show where kids would put on this like Velcro suit and they would run through this game store and stick all the games that they could to their person in like a minute or something like that. There's like, it was like some crazy like 80s style game show, and you might have like a longer trailer or something in like one of those shows or maybe something along those lines. Like I remember somehow seeing some kind of like a tech demo or something, but again, it was probably on the news, because the news used to broadcast like what was big with gaming, like, because it was, I mean, it was a news story back then, you know. So I don't remember exactly what it could have been, a magazine as well, right? Because like the cover of Nintendo Power and stuff, it would show Mario writing, like, there again, it's hard for me to even put into words like the feeling, but I can go back to it and I can vividly feel like when I first saw like all the colors and the way they talked about the Super Nintendo and like all the marketing, like 32,000 colors or whatever, you know, like there was all this just marketing nonsense that, like, you know, you're trying to fathom 32,000 colors or whatever it was that they use. But the biggest thing too was like, this is like playing the arcade, right? It was like, this is, you didn't get these kind of graphics in the arcade, like at home, until now. And so that was just, It was a massive deal for sure. How many siblings do you have?
So I've got one full sibling, a half sister, and three step siblings. So quite a big family. I only grew up with my full sister, like in the same household, if that makes sense. The step siblings a bit younger and the half sister's a bit older. But yeah, big family. Yeah.
Did you guys play a lot together?
My sister a bit. Because it was my gift, I would always hog it and like take it off her, and I was better than her as well. So I think she felt a little excluded. In retrospect, I should have shared more. But yeah, a bit. And then my stepbrother, we haven't played a lot together, but he's really into his gaming, and he had a Wii, and has played more games recently. But again, you know, I'd left home by then. I'd gone to college, so we didn't play too much. It was mostly friends from school, you know.
Okay, so. What, like, sticking with the 64, I mean, you know, I'm assuming maybe there was some GoldenEye, Perfect Dark, maybe some Turok, any of the shooters?
You know, a good friend of mine from school, he had GoldenEye, and I played with him quite a lot. I never had it myself, but I loved it. It was a great game. I don't think I ever played Perfect Dark, and would love to. And Turok, he had, so I saw him play a little. I never played Zelda myself, but I saw him play it quite a lot. That would have been Ocarina of Time. So a lot of my early Nintendo experiences kind of lived through him as well, in a sense. I'd go to his house.
No, we had a very similar experience. I mean, I grew up on a farm. I did have a huge family. I was the oldest of six.
Oh, wow.
My sisters didn't play all that much. Like they played some, but I remember we got the NES as a family gift and they were like, they felt like they were screwed out of a present basically. And, you know, so they played some, but not nearly as much as me. And then the SNES was all mine. And, but the neighbors, you know, we would all trade games. We all, you know, had different games. I remember my friend getting the SNES, like the day it came out, you know, and like going to his house. And, like I said, I was in the country, right? And I was probably 4 miles from like the main highway, which then had some gas stations. And one of those gas stations had a Highway Home Electronics, and we could rent games there. And we walked and got Street Fighter II and then walked back. And then it was like 2 full days of nothing but Mario, Street Fighter. Like we did not stop. Like and he had the big projection screen TV, and we just sat and played. Like super fun memories of.
You probably barely slept as well. I remember similar things, just like so much soft drink and caffeine and junk food, and just like not sleeping for like 24 hours, and then you arrive home and your parents are like, what have you been doing? Why are you like asleep in the car sort of thing? You know what I mean? But yeah, good times.
Not only that, but the pain on my thumb from like the D-pad wearing it raw, like there was always the Nintendo thumb after those sleepovers where it was like, man, there is, you know, especially on the NES, because those things were sharp. They rounded them over finally on the Super Nintendo, but the NES was like, nah, everything's sharp corners on these ones. So trying to do those fireballs, man, they would just wear your thumb out.
Yeah, the 64 controller, like at the time it seemed like the most normal thing, but in retrospect it's a very strange shape, and as you say, the joysticks dug in a bit into the fingers, and they really weren't designed for comfort. You kind of wonder how Nintendo came up with that design at all. Sort of typical Nintendo, really, isn't it?
You know, you can almost envision it, right? Because they're thinking, we want to be able to switch between maybe like a 2D experience and a 3D experience, and the 3D experience being better controlled with the stick. So like, it's just early innovation, right? They're just like, hey, we want to create three controllers or two controllers in one. And we look at modern design and it's like, well, this was right in front, but it wasn't. They went from, I'm holding up the Super Nintendo controller right now. They went from this to like this, right? They're like, how can we control
I never really thought of, because I didn't really play 2D games on the 64. I never really thought that if you hold it from the outside, it's a bit like the SNES controller, like a 2D controller. It makes more sense now, actually.
And I mean, honestly, I don't know that I'd given it all that much thought until we just started talking about it now. And I'm literally like, I played Mario RPG with my Super Nintendo controller last night, because I was just like, hey, I played Wonder with the Super Nintendo controller once I got it hooked up to the screen, because I'm just like, this feels like home. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels, it just feels right. Like all, like, you know, I plugged in the footage of Double Dash, you know, I've got my GameCube controller plugged into my Wii. And like when I played Sunshine on the Switch, I'm using my GameCube controller. Like I try to stick with the controller they're designed for if possible, just because it's just an extra level of nostalgia, essentially, is all it boils down to.
And with the Wii games that are on Switch, experiencing them, like, you know, in motion form is so much better. Like, a Galaxy, for instance, it's so good. How have you found? I've just bought Mario RPG. I'm really keen to play it. I probably wouldn't have. I've heard it's a great game, but I probably wouldn't have played the SNES game, just because what we were talking about before. You go back to that era, which is before my era, and just feels quite janky. Even the 64 feels janky. So how did Mario RPG compare to the original?
So I played very little of RPG on the Super Nintendo. I remember my friend had it, and you know, so, but again, at the time it was like, this is revolutionary. And it was actually, because it came out in 96, it's the same year that the 64 was out. So it was up against, I was reading up on it and getting prepared for doing a show on it. It was up against like the best graphics like of the year, and it lost to like Mario 64, if I remember correct. Like, I was just briefly studying it last night, so I need, you know, you guys can tweet at me if I'm wrong, but I'm gonna, when I get the show out, we'll know for sure. But it was something along those lines. Like, it was literally competing against 64 games for best graphics. What's funny now is you see all these tweets coming out. I keep saying tweets. It'll never stop. I can't not say tweets. It just sounds weird to say posts, because I'm like, are we talking about Facebook or what? But that like there's a toy box in that game that has Samus and Rob and the car from Stunt Race FX. But on the Super Nintendo, you had no idea. It looked like just a blob of colors. Well, they were actually supposed to be, unless they've, maybe they had a little bit of, took a little bit of creative, just kind of played with it the way they wanted. But it seems to me that now jumping into it, to answer your question, I love it. I was laughing last night. I felt like this feels like playing as a kid in the 90s again, but like how you envisioned it in your mind. That's my favorite thing about these HD remakes, when it's like, you know, if I think about this game, it probably looks more like what I was seeing here versus what it actually looks like. Just kind of like we talked about at the beginning, where it's like you go back and you're like, I don't remember it being like this, you know? So
the
I'm
nostalgia
really
glasses.
Enjoying it. Yes.
Yeah. Great. I'll have to give it a go. I really like Nintendo doing these remakes. It'd be good if they did more of them. You know, you guys often talk on the PowerCast about how they should just do more things and like license their material more to third parties, and it just makes sense for them to do that. I'm really excited for Thousand Year Door. Are you excited for that as well? Did you play the original?
No, I didn't.
Neither.
I didn't. The first Mario, like, I mean, I played RPG some, but I didn't play it to completion. Again, I had a friend, and it must have been one of those things. It must have been new, and he did not like letting me borrow it for long periods of time. And so, I didn't get into it. And then they jumped over to like DS with like, you know, the Mario and the Dream. I can't remember like what was it called, the Mario and Luigi Dream Team. And it was just like, I don't know. I think when I saw RPGs, I was like, yeah, it's not really my thing. Turn-based, especially back then, I was all about like the fighting games, you know, give me Street Fighter, give me Killer Instinct, give me that kind of stuff, Smash, whatever. Like, let me go on my adventures. I didn't really appreciate the turn-based stuff all that much. I didn't even play Pokemon until I was probably in my 20s.
Wow.
On the like Game Boy Color the Game Boy Color. And then, it wasn't until Xenoblade Chronicles 2 that I played another turn-based RPG. And so for me, RPGs felt like a board game. And I was like, I don't want to take turns rolling dice. I want my skills to be able to take out the bad guys or whatever, if you will, you know? So,
I feel the same. I struggle a lot with JRPGs, and since COVID I've got back into gaming a lot more. Like I didn't play much the last decade before that. And so I have tried JRPGs, particularly like Xenoblade, like some of the ones that, you know, you guys and others recommend. And I've really struggled. Like I can get 10, 20 hours into Xenoblade or Dragon Quest, but Xenoblade 3 this was, but it's just not the same as an action RPG like Zelda or Elden Ring or something like that, right? For the same reason, it just feels a little slow. I like time-based skill stuff, which I gather Thousand Year Door and Mario RPG have a bit of like timing. It's not like purely turn-based.
RPG and yeah, exactly. There's like the action. It's like the action buttons during the turns, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And so that does that. And I think that's why RPG kind of resonated with me and I liked it, because I felt like I was still in the battle, not just like watching the battle, you know. And then even like Origami King had some of those elements too. It was just that that weird circle battle thing was like, this is not it. Like, at that point I would have preferred more like RPG, just a more traditional, you know. I know they were trying, like they took their risk and I get it, like take those risks, but it's surprising to me that internally somebody wasn't like, guys, this is not good. You know, like this is boring and repetitive. So, you know, but it's
I've
just
heard the Thousand Year Door combat system significantly better than Origami King. So you'd think they would at least have just used the same combat system, right? But yeah, I don't know, JRPGs or turn-based RPGs, I don't think there's much future for them, in the sense of like kids, the younger and younger generation, they want like instant, like fighting, like action. It'll be I think they'll become very niche, the whole turn-based thing for those type of games. So we'll see.
Well, there's kind of a resurgence with, I mean, I shouldn't even say resurgence. Yeah. I don't think they've ever gone anywhere, but a resurgence for some people, when you look at games like Octopath and, you know, Triangle Strategy, like to take, because they look like a Super Nintendo game, but also like as if you could turn like, you know, 16-bit pixels into like a beautiful, like painting, if you will, like the art style and everything is just beautiful. So, and those are like very old school, like traditional RPGs. Like there is, it's pick your item, pick your move, whatever. And I don't believe there's any kind of action buttons or anything like that. But again, there's something relaxing about it, because it's almost like you're just kind of interacting with a book in a way. Right. That's how I kind of view it now. And maybe it's just because I've gotten older or whatever the case is. But you take like Xenoblade and you're still moving around. You're just not attacking. And I didn't love it at first. But then once I understood that, there was like, wait a minute, I get to put strategy behind this as far as like, how am I attacking with who? Like if I was trying to manage all of that, I think it would have lost its, I don't think it would have been nearly as fun. So the auto attack makes perfect sense. But that's for Xenoblade 2. I have not been able to get as pulled into Xenoblade 1. And I loved what I was playing with 3. I just got too busy that I couldn't stick with it. So,
well, that's the other thing. Often they're like 60, 70 hour games, right? And I think Nintendo does a good job of being like, here's 10, 15 hours. And like often that's all I want. I think 70 hours, it can be grinding, repetitive. And that's already a problem. If, you know, you and I find the action systems in these turn-based games repetitive to start with, when there's no chance we're going to last like 60 hours, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing that's fun with Super Mario RPG is I've played an hour. I recorded an hour of footage, and I mean, again, like a smile on my face the whole time. Like I'm hoping and praying that they are setting up for a sequel. That this is not all these assets will not be used for one game, that there is something in the works here that could potentially be a release title or a holiday title for next year with, you know, or maybe it's a few years out even, but I get the feeling that they don't want to wait, or I don't think they'll want to wait too long to market the next game after this one. Like let this one be out for 6 months or something, and then announce, you know, after so many years, the sequel to Super Mario RPG is finally here. Like I think people would go nuts for it, especially everybody that's now getting introduced to it to the first time. Because the only way to like really play this game outside of like owning a copy, I mean, of course you can emulate, but like I bought it on my Wii. But I didn't really jump in. It was one of those things I was like, oh, I want to play this. But I think in my mind, I'm like, this is going to take, you know, 60 hours. And it's like, it's actually only I think Crawler beat it in like 13 hours, you know? So some people are saying 10. Like, I think if you're familiar with the game, you played it in the past, you could probably get through it a little bit quicker.
Well, Nintendo just do such a great job with pretty well every genre of making the game. appealing to the mass and really enjoyable. And like you say, not too long. Like, I don't really like platformers much either, but I love all of the 2D and 3D Marios and the Yoshi and Donkey Kong. Like, I dislike platformers that aren't Nintendo platformers, if that makes sense. And I think a lot of people have similar experiences with different genres versus the Nintendo equivalent. So, yeah.
You are going to be in for a treat with Braid. I believe Braid was just announced at that last Indie Direct. I believe it was. And I've been wanting to see that game make its way to the Switch for quite some time. And it's not nearly as much about the platforming as it is about the, like, there's a time mechanic to it, similar to like Prince of Persia, Sands of Time kind of thing. And
I did like Prince of Persia, the Sands of Time, I think the 3D-ish one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a pretty great game. And it's the story. The story will pull you in and you're like, it's just got twists. It's just so well written. Like, it's not just the platforming. It's a complete package, honestly. So for a bite-sized little platformer, but like, how do you feel about like Metroid Dread or some of the Metroid games?
I'd never played Metroid games or Metroidvanias before the Switch, and Dread was my first, and it's probably maybe my favorite game on the Switch, definitely one of my favorites. But then and then I went to Silksong, which is awesome. What's that Microsoft one called?
You called Ori? It Silksong. People are gonna freak out. You've played Silksong? No.
No, sorry, not the sequel, the original. Yeah. What was the original called?
Hollow Knight, yeah.
Hollow Knight, exactly. I wish I played Silksong, yeah. But then Metroid Prime struggled with the remaster. Like,
oh, interesting.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess you didn't have that. It just feels a little janky. I like the 3D kind of Metroidvania thing, but I don't know. I didn't finish it. I struggled through like 10, 15 hours and probably enjoyed a few hours, like 5-6 hours of it. And I'd heard it's like one of the best games of all time and all this kind of thing. And yeah, I don't know. How do you compare Dread versus Metroid Prime? Which you prefer?
I love them equally. And if you, so have you not played Super Metroid?
I that's on the Super Nintendo or the NES emulator on the Switch, right? Yes. I gave it like 20 minutes. Yeah. But no, I haven't really played it.
So because it's older, it's not as hand-holdy, like, at all. But if you invest the time into that one, you will not regret it. Like, you want, once you start to get the hang of it and you understand where you're going and how the, like, even if you have to look up some walkthroughs or something, like, it is so, it's in my top five games of all time.
I'll have to check it out. It's one of those games I hear like constantly people saying it's like one of their favorites. I really hope Nintendo do a remake of it too, you know. Did you play the 2D Metroid that was on the DS? I think it was made by the same developer as Dread.
Samus Returns. Yes.
Yeah. Was that good? I've been meaning to play that as well.
It's fantastic. Yeah, it's fantastic. Again, I didn't play it through completion because I think it was just a timing thing. Like, the Switch was right around the corner. We were focusing heavily on Smash, and so a lot of my time, even my handheld time, was taken up by Smash. But they did a great job with it. Like, it's, I've been hoping they would port it over to the Switch. Like, it deserves an HD like port. It's that good. Like, it would be a great addition right alongside Dread on the Switch, or potentially the next, you know, the next Switch, whatever, when it's coming out. Like,
and it's a great example of like where Nintendo should be investing more in games, because it would be easy to port. There's tons of studios that specialize in porting. Like, yeah, they could get that thing done quickly, but they're very particular, and they just don't release enough stuff. And I get it, they're trying to get 9 out of 10 games every time they release stuff, but I don't know, I feel like the fans would appreciate a higher volume of games, right?
Well, did you play the Wii U much?
I actually bought one specifically, and I've sold it back to the secondhand shop. Specifically, play Wind Waker. I played Donkey Kong on it, and a couple of other games. But I've sold it back now. Yeah, it's a funny machine.
We have been eating well since that system. I can tell you that much. Like, you know what PlayStation's going through right now? How there's really nothing but third party, and they even announced next year there's not much except for third party games, other than some remakes. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think we're in a little bit of a, I think we're in a bit of a lull with the Switch, because I have a feeling a lot of the games that are being worked on right now are being worked on for the next system. That being said, I think they're going to market them to both for a while. I don't foresee them just like completely abandoning the Switch for at least 2 years, maybe longer, because they talked about how they're going to be, this console transition is going to be different than what we've seen before. Because I did just a goofy little TikTok news minute yesterday, and Mario Kart 8 for the first time in 78 months dropped out of the US top 20 charts.
Wow.
78 months it's been in the top 20. So finally we can hopefully start to hear something about the sequel. And I mean, knowing their top game on the Switch is finally slowing down, and if they can launch the next one with the next system with the new Mario Kart, I think it's going to be, you know, just a gold mine for them. But I firmly believe that the next Mario Kart will also be on Switch. I think the install base is too massive for them to leave it behind. And if they do it right, it'll have crossplay and everything. It'll be like going from like an Xbox One to the Xbox Series, where you could still crossplay, but not everybody's graphics aren't the same, right? So
they kind of have to, when you sold, you know, what, 120 million Switches or whatever. Yeah, like everyone wants to make games for that install base. Like, not many people want to make games for the one that you've sold a few million of in the first year or two, or, you know, when it's getting going. So yeah, interesting. When's your pick on when it will drop then, the new Switch?
That's tough, because it's the holidays right now, so we obviously aren't hearing anything about it, because they don't want to undermine any of the, like, they're pushing hard for, like, they got that Smash Switch out, and they've got the Mario Kart Switch, and Mario's anniversary Switch is out. Like, they're trying to capitalize as much as they can on the final, I assume it will be the final holiday for the Switch. But the one thing that's crazy, they've never had a price drop, so they can announce a new system and then do a price drop and still capitalize on all of the potential sales from people that are like, ah, I'll just pull the trigger now, you know, like. And so when do I think it's going to drop, though? My hope is March. My gut feeling is September.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm super keen to get hold of better graphics and the same experience. I have a Steam Deck, but it's really janky kind of device. It's not, I only use it because it's the only way you can play Elden Ring and stuff portably, right? But I'd love for Nintendo to have just a lighter, better designed device that maybe can't play Elden Ring, but can play at least some more modern games.
Yeah, I'm right there. Like, if Nintendo can put out a system that allows third parties to really shine on it, I think it's going to be great. If not, they need to open up their IP to more companies and let, you know, Super Mario RPG is a Square game, right? Now, Square I don't think had anything to do with the remake, maybe some consulting or something like that, because I don't remember the name of the company that did it. But that's, you know, we saw early on with Ubisoft doing Mario plus Rabbids, and the what was it, the Starlink or whatever, having Star Fox. There's a lot there that, like, I would love to see. You know, we saw, what was that, Dead Cells teamed up with Castlevania. Well,
yep.
I mean, could that team do something with Metroid? Metroid 2D is pretty in pretty good hands right now at the moment, but like, what's Punch-Out doing? What are some of these other, you know, older IPs that what's Donkey Kong Country doing? Like, we know Retro's working on...
Yeah, I'd love it, Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah, and so it's just, I'm just curious on...
And like you say, like, obviously quality is probably their main concern, but they would have the pick of the best studios around, like whoever does Hollow Knight, if you offered them Metroid, I assume they would snap it up and love to make a Metroid game. They could just handpick, you know, from the top 10, 20 indie developers and give the IP to them for one game each and just see what happens. Like, there's really not much to lose, I don't think.
I don't believe so. And I think there's opportunity for, you know, even this is kind of like obviously just like a pipe dream or whatever, but like giving the IP to, let's say the one of the teams that does Call of Duty and having a, like some kind of Nintendo shooter, right? That's like, maybe like a, I mean, look how Fortnite just takes all of these different pop culture things and puts them all together. Like, give us a Smash style first person shooter. That's like, we're just running around. It's goofy. It's kid friendly. But it's as tight and, well polished as a Call of Duty game.
That's a great idea, actually. Like, obviously they think of Splatoon as a shooter, but I don't like it as much as a Battlefield or a Call of Duty. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many opportunities out there for the IP. But really, they should be able to, with the Switch 2, release a device that's least up to par with, like, the PS4. And then you can have pretty well most of the modern releases on it that just don't look as good as they would on a PS5. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's an interesting one. They're very, like, they just do their own thing, don't they? It's like the market heads one way and they kind of just do something completely different. Do you think we'll see, because the obvious like big innovation they could do in the coming years is VR, virtual reality. Do you think we'll see a virtual reality console at some point from Nintendo?
We did, called the Virtual Boy, and it flopped horribly. So no, I'm just playing, but I don't know. I think my gut feeling with VR is that the tech isn't up to par quite yet. It's getting there. But I know for me, like, I played Ghostbusters at TwitchCon on the MetaQuest, and like, I did not like that feeling of like motion sickness, you know, like could I envision playing Luigi's Mansion in VR? 1,000% yes. Like, you know, Crawler and I both did Ghostbusters, and he's like, I saw the button to like pull the, you know, to like pull my proton pack or whatever and be able to, he goes, I saw it once and then I couldn't remember what it was. So then I was just kind of running around throwing traps and everything. Well, I'm like, okay, I was in the same boat, but I just reached my hand back and hit a button and then pulled it forward and I pulled it. And I'm like, if that was the Poltergeist, you know, being able to run around as Luigi in Luigi's Mansion and stuff, I think it would be, it's one of those things, it would be fun, but at the same time, I love what they did with Luigi's Mansion 3 where he is like, he's like shaking and like chattering his teeth. And like, you feel there's a very like, that sense of immersion just from the character interacting with everything, not just staring there blankly at everything you're doing, you know? So it's tough. It's almost like the Dread versus Prime kind of thing, where it was like, as long as we still have, I don't want to sacrifice it all for just VR. You know what I mean? It's like Among Us, yeah. How they have Among Us VR and then just the standard game as well. So I don't know. I mean, you know, Nintendo also had Labo where you could just put the Switch into the virtual, into the VR cardboard headset. But I think they're just going to keep dipping their toes in the water. And I don't think, at the moment they really see a reason to jump in. It's not like you have PlayStation attempting it. You've got Facebook attempting it. And I know there are some early adopters and some people that really love it. And but at the same time, I feel like there's far more people that are just sticking with standard gaming. And if Nintendo is all about profits, right? So it has to be to where like they don't want any issues with motion sickness, headaches, anything like that because of Virtual Boy all the way back in the 80s, 90s. And then the other thing is like it has to, they want to sell at a profit. So it has to, the tech has to come down enough that like their audience is going to be. And the other thing with Switch is like, it's all about portability and VR is very much stationary. So it's hard to say. It's hard to, if they do VR, I almost see it like it's its own separate entity. Like
a new console. Like they go back into the two consoles instead of the single console again. Yeah, that's interesting. Like you say, I think I've got an Oculus and playing Onward. I don't know if you ever played it. It's the it's like Battlefield or Call of Duty. It's an amazing experience. Like you have to reload your guns, like literally reload them with your hands. But yeah, you definitely get the motion sickness. It's a bit janky and it's certainly not ready for mainstream. So I think maybe it's like waiting for the technology to be ready. And Nintendo have done pretty well. Like the Wii came a long time after motion controls existed and they did it really well. So maybe they just wait. But like you say, maybe they go back to two consoles at some point. I mean, they really can't afford to have another Wii U, can they? It could destroy the company if they have a flop on their single console. So
I think they're healthy enough now with enough cash that because it's not just the games now, it's the movies, it's the amusement parks, you know, all the stuff that they're doing. So, but
and the movies, yeah, that's a fair point. I guess they've got the diversification, and they must be sitting on a ton of profit from the Switch anyway. So, they're in a healthy position.
Yeah, they could get weird. They could take a few risks, but at the same time, their investors are also very happy at the moment. So, you know, what they end up doing, I don't think they're going to get too weird. I think they're realizing that, like, they're probably looking at the stats of the Switch, like how many people really took the Joy-Cons off and hold them in each hand when they play versus just grabbing a Pro Controller or... And I mean, that's kind of be interesting to find out. Like I never
so sit true.
With each Joy-Con in my hand and play. Whereas I know right at the launch of the Switch, a lot of people loved that, but I just don't know that that's the,
I've only ever done it for Wii games like, Mario Galaxy, where you kind of, to your point, using the right controller for the right game. But yeah, it's not something I would do for a Switch game. No way. It doesn't make sense. I wonder as well, you know how like Microsoft are buying all these developers and Sony kind of similar kind of thinking. I wonder if Nintendo will think about the same thing. Sega would be perfect for them, right? Like Sega have this great IP and they really haven't done well with it and they haven't built good games for a long time in general. And if Nintendo were to take over Sega and I guess increase the quality of their releases and use that IP and add all their characters into Mario Kart and Smash and whatnot, that could be interesting. I wonder if they're considering something like that, or they just, again, they just don't care, just do their own thing.
I don't know how they think, you know. Like I saw recently, and I'm going to talk about it in the news, the NPC news minute today. Like there's a chart of like you know, the top like game, essentially the top companies in games. Tencent is well at the top. Nintendo is not very high on the list. Number three is I believe it's Tencent, Sony, and then Xbox. But I'll have the chart up when I'm going over it. But for the first time since the Activision Blizzard deal, that's going to put Microsoft at number two, just for the amount of money that the games will be, and it'll put Sony at number three for the first time ever with it on these charts against Xbox. And Nintendo is quite low on the list, below Apple, below, like, it's there's quite a few, you know, below Activision Blizzard. Yet they're still doing
really below Activision Blizzard. I did not know that, but I guess it makes sense. Yeah, I mean, as you're saying, I mean, people forget that mobile gaming is much bigger than console gaming, despite it being much worse as an experience. I think that's where most of the dollars go. Yeah,
there's a lot. There's a lot there, and I mean, and Nintendo experienced it, right? Fire Emblem, Pokemon Go, like they've dipped their toes in the water. I am leaning towards Nintendo moving to more mobile with the next console as more of a, like, I think they could utilize mobile as a companion app where that's what they talked about doing with the, like, they talked about how it was going to be that way. I could find the video where they showed them, like, you know, they were talking about teaming up with DNA and like, there's like the ecosystem of the Wii U and the 3DS and the mobile and the new system. You know, I don't even know if they had announced the Switch yet, but then we never really saw it. Like, I think the initial idea was that like Animal Crossing Pocket Camp was going to, you know, you're going to be able to move items between Pocket Camp and New Horizons. And that never came to fruition. Like there was, if you had an account, you got like a handful of different items. But there was never any reason for me to pick up Pocket Camp to further my progress in New Horizons. And I feel like it's a misstep because like if I could have played, like let's say where my head goes is Mario Kart, where they do like a battle pass, where I could play a tour style Mario Kart to keep progressing my battle pass, but then jump in and play the real game on my Switch or whatever, if I'm like, because we don't always carry our Switch with us everywhere. You know,
no, it's standing, a great standing, idea.
Stand in line for coffee or whatever the case is. And you,
yeah,
you know, you're at the dentist, whatever, like to just pull your phone out and be able to, you know, just one hand, play some Mario Kart, progress your battle pass a little bit, unlock some costumes, whatever, and then jump in and sweat with everybody else on the actual game. Like to make it's like the Game Boy used to be to the GameCube. Right. Or the Game Boy Advance to the GameCube, where like you could go to like there was like what Tinkle was tied to something in Wind Waker. And then like you could go to the island on Animal Crossing with the Game Boy Advance, or you could even upload the NES games to your GBA from Animal Crossing and be able to play those on the go. Like it just felt like more of a companion, and that to me would be far more interactive and cool than just your typical like, oh, here's Tour, and it's, you know, it's its own thing. We started to see them bleed over, right, with all the new tracks, and so that's what's kind of got me thinking, like, is there a possibility that we see more of a companion style app? Because I think they could even do things with Fire Emblem to where they like did more to, you know, maybe you could level up your character on mobile, and then when you jump back into your game, you're you know, you're at a higher level or something along those lines, you know, like that's where they get to come in and be the geniuses. That's what they do best. But it's strange to me we don't see a lot of that happening, where you could, like, it would not only encourage everybody that picks it up on mobile to then go get the Switch and play.
Yeah, totally.
Play there, but then also everybody that's on Switch, maybe there's some monetization strategy they could use to get us to spend a little extra money on the mobile game as well. So it seems strange it's not thought out more, but you know, they look at what they've done and then they probably base their decisions off of those metrics, and it just may not have the ROI for them to jump in. So
there's so many phones, right? Like it's such a big install base that surely they could have a hit game, and the quality of the games on the phones is generally very poor. So I feel like they could definitely, particularly if they did Mario Kart or Smash, like a franchise that's got like a really strong following, and like you say, then you complement it with the actual console. So you play on both. I mean, both Smash and Mario Kart should really be like service games where maybe a paid subscription. So it's not like, you know, I know Nintendo don't like doing paid outfits and all the kind of Fortnite-y stuff. Maybe like a low price paid subscription. And then they just need to update them all the time, like new tracks all the time, you know, battle passes all the time. It makes sense for these games to be like that, I think, you know.
I'm 1,000% there. As long as they don't strictly do that, right? Everybody to feel like, because I know there are people that hate it, and I get it.
Yeah.
Like, but I know for me, when I've got Mario Kart as my most played game, if I could buy a battle pass to keep playing it for a reason versus just the same tracks. But if I was unlocking something, grinding something, it's an added incentive, right? It makes it more fun. But I know there are people that are hearing this that are just like, do not bring live service into, but it's the unfortunate thing is it is the future. Like it is.
Yeah.
It's where the,
and like you say, you could do both, you know, you have your initial release, you pay $50 for that or whatever. And then beyond that, if you want more content, you pay either per pass or per month. And ultimately, if you're paying per month, they would then have to fully staff it with a development team that are just constantly building and releasing stuff. And I think we'd all benefit there, particularly as if you say that there is an option for just a one-off purchase for those people that don't like the subscription. But Nintendo seem to just like look at the market and the trends and just do the opposite or do their own thing, right? You can never quite tell.
That's always been them. But there was a quote recently from, I believe, the Rockstar talking about, I don't know if it's Rockstar or their pub. I don't know if they've, who exactly it was. It was somebody high up tied to the Rockstar series. And they said $70 is too cheap for games and that we should be charging $5 a day or $5 an hour or something to rent. Like,
wow.
Like, I don't know the exact quote, but it was,
yeah.
Regardless, it was like basically games should be a rental. Like, because they're looking at, you know, people have been playing the, you know, Grand Theft Auto RP and they've been playing online for years, you know, so they're maintaining those servers and everything. Like, I'm not saying I'm for that, like that rental, but like, and there may be, you know, obviously there's you get into like corporate greed and that kind of stuff too, but I think there is a real conversation around, like, you know, if people are investing that much time, are the companies leaving money on the table, and how is it best used, not just to please investors but to really benefit the gamer and add more value, right? That's
well, like the Game Pass, how they're trying to just give you as much as possible, like all of the Microsoft first parties plus other things. That's probably inevitable for Nintendo as well, particularly as we head to like cloud gaming. Maybe then you have, like, to your point on mobile, you have like a Nintendo Game Pass thing for all of their games, first party, old games, third party stuff. And then you could play on mobile or on PC or on Switch. But again, as you say, a lot of people don't like that, but it seems a way that the average consumer could pay a bit more and get a lot more content. So it's sort of a win-win scenario, because we don't want to be paying more and getting less content, right? That's certainly not going to help the consumer.
No, not at all. Well, hey, we are just about at that hour mark. So do you got anything you'd like to shout out, like any Twitter or anything? It goes fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. No, yeah, I'm not a commenter in video gaming, or at least not yet, but I have Twitter at Dave JL Sherwood. So if you want to check me out there, and really appreciate you, Josh, putting me on the show. It's been on my bucket list to like do a podcast or create one. I thought creating is just way too hard. Like, you've worked so hard over this period of time. I thought, well, maybe you just message me or let me on an episode. So you've ticked off my bucket list item. So thank you. I appreciate it.
I love that. And I will say, start it. It's easier than you think. And I can help you out. I got lots of resources and stuff. So just let me know.
Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. I do want to mention, if you made it this far, for Black Friday, One Shot Energy, you get 30% off by using code N64Josh. So that's only up until probably through Cyber Monday. But One Shot Energy, if you want to try those energy chews, I've been loving them. And you can save 30% by using code N64Josh at checkout. So thanks so much, Dave. And we'll see you guys in the next one. Bye now.